It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome back to Money for Lunch. Good to have you here. It's a good way to start the show. Not start the show, start the week. Yeah. Excuse me. I've just been asked to spit my gum out. All right. So, good stuff happening. We have a lot of great guests this week, as always. But today, we're going to start the show off with regular contributor and good friend, Jason Drone. Jason Drone, he is one of my favorite people to have on the show because he's an average guy, Pepsi truck driver turned online marketing guru. He's been marketing online now for 8 years, working literally with thousands of entrepreneurs through his courses and done-for-you services. He's best known for his quickest path to cash strategies, where he literally cuts years of testing and development out of clients' lives and delivers sales funnels that are both automated and profitable. The really cool thing is I've known Jason now for a couple of years, and I've seen him change and get bigger and better. And this is the go-to guy. A lot of people grab Jason to get his input on different scenarios as far as growing their business. Always good to have him on the show. Jason Drone, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
How are you doing, Bert?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. A surviving Monday after a holiday weekend.
You know, it's interesting. Mondays typically are rough enough as it is, but after a holiday, you're right, they're even harder. You know, interestingly enough, I was going to the gym, and I'm telling my wife I'm having a tough time waking up. And I mean, I've been up for hours, but I'm just still out of it. I'm groggy, and so yeah, man, Mondays are rough.
They're not fun.
No,
it's funny. Mondays, it's like I don't schedule any calls, you know, because it's just you got the weekend stuff, and then you have preparing for the coming week and getting all that laid out. And yeah, Mondays are my least favorite days, but you know, it is what it is.
That's right. All right, well, let's talk about this. You and I talked over the weekend, so I want to kind of bring this up because you and I talked over the weekend. You're helping me with my own marketing. And one of the things that you brought up is blog content. And so I want to ask you about this. You know, blogs have been around for a while. Why has blog content been such an important part of the sales process now?
That's a great question. So blog content, I discovered blogging like 10 years ago. It was actually the reason I kind of jumped off into my own thing from Pepsi was, I found out about this thing called blogging, and I read this report on how to be a professional blogger. And I was like, well, geez, I could be a professional blogger. I mean, what's a professional blogger, you know? Back then, it was this weird term that blogging was nothing more than diaries that people posted online about what they were doing or, you know, in the business world, it was how they were building businesses and all kinds of other stuff. But basically, it gave you this medium to let you publish anything you wanted, just no more difficult than typing up a Word document, you know?
Right.
So that, I got excited about that. And since then, you know, blogging and content marketing is kind of what it's, you know, quote-unquote content marketing. There's even, you know, content marketers out there now. But what this does is it allows you to write about your product or your service or your market or your industry and become the expert for your audience. So the reason blog content or content pieces or content marketing are so prevalent in a sales funnel now is because you're able to deliver value to your audience prior to them doing anything with you. So you can give value before an email opt-in or before a purchase, and establish, start building some of that trust and credibility in their mind. And they are just reading your site. You know, so what's happening is we're seeing that there are a lot of ad networks and a lot of ways to promote your content. Not necessarily promote your opt-in pages or your offers or your sales pages or any of that stuff, but a lot of different ways to promote your content. And when you use content as the initial marketing piece, that somebody comes in, they consume your content, and then it's their choice whether they want to engage with you further or not. That's a way to get very, very cheap traffic and still build that trust and credibility in a way that you've never have been able to before.
All right, so yeah, that's a great answer. I think it's a great answer. And sometimes, you know, with all the different things you hear out there, you know, about, what do you call it, technology or mobile apps or Facebook ads or, you know, driving traffic here and there, one of the things I want to emphasize is that it still boils down to building that trust and credibility. Nothing has ever changed. Mm-hmm. It's still know, like, and trust, right? And mm-hmm. and sometimes people forget that. Let me ask you this. Okay, so I put together a blog. I got some content on there. Let's say, you know, I think when you and I spoke last, you said, hey, it should be a fairly in-depth article or blog post. You said around 1,500 words or so.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the next step? How are we going to use the site or this blog to get traffic and sales? How do we convert that? You know, how are we going to get the traffic there? How are we going to convert it to sales?
It's a great question. So if you think about your audience, like, you know, who would ultimately be the person buying your product or service? So you know, kind of picture that person and say, what would he want to know more about? In his current situation, what would he want to know more? So, you know, and really the answer is dependent on the niche. You know, for example, we have a couple pieces of software. One of them is Scriptly. So Scriptly is a software designed to write your email autoresponders and your webinars for you. You know, just fill in a short form and fill it in. And it, you know, creates all your marketing copy. So what we've done with the blog on Scriptly is we've talked about all kinds of other things related to email marketing and sales that is not email marketing. So what we do is we'll deliver information about building your email list or converting webinar sales or writing clickable email copy. You know, all of these things that our market is interested in or would be interested in, things that will help them grow their business, grow as a person, you know, and further some development. And if they decide that it's easier for them to sign up for the free trial of Scriptly and have Scriptly write all their emails for them, then we invite them to do that. But if not, that's okay too. You know, if they just want to read the articles and decide they want to do it on their own, it's going to take a lot longer, of course, but, you know, it is what it is. So
right, but I like that.
So
you know, let me recap this so everybody is on the same page. So bottom line is I like, first of all, you get into your client's mind, specifically your ideal client's mind. What is keeping them up? What is stopping them from let's say writing good content? And mm-hmm. most of the time, the thing that stops most of us from writing good content is is the time, right? Because, you know, writing a 1,500-word article could take,
time,
you know, an hour or a month, depending on who you are, right?
Yeah.
So with something like Scriptly, then you can go there and you can see how Scriptly can help you overcome that time objection. And so you're no longer, your client is no longer going to be stuck because of this time component, because Scriptly is going to help them out. And again, like you said, they may say, hey, I'm not interested in Scriptly, but the content itself has to stand alone and be good. And it's got to deliver value.
Mm-hmm.
So where they go, you know what, I'm not going to buy Scriptly today, but I really like this Jason guy. I like what he's talking about here. This makes sense to me. And so now I'm going to follow this guy. I'm going to opt into his list. I may follow him on Twitter. I may check him out on Facebook to see if this guy is who he says he is. But all this stuff is just getting to the like, know, trust stage.
Right. Well, here's a great example. So when you're building sales funnels and you're trying to sell stuff online, whether it's services, products, high ticket coaching, whatever, you have a sales funnel. You have some sort of sales process in order to move somebody from just being cold to ultimately being a customer of yours. Well, the nice thing about blog content is you don't have to change the funnel, quote unquote. You don't have to record any sales video. You don't have to, you know, all of those things, you know, that make the funnel great. You don't need to change any of that stuff. All you need to do to change your offer is add a new blog post in front of it. So you just add a new content marketing piece. That content marketing piece, the sole purpose of that content marketing piece or advertorial is to get somebody reading, then click over to your sales video, your sales message, and then to click through that and then ultimately buy. So and I was actually just looking at stats before this call. So we, on Scriptly, we have a we have a blog post. It was published last year sometime, and it's 7 lead magnets. So basically 7 lead magnets, 7 things that you can give away to get people to opt into your list. So I was looking at stats of this blog post, and we've had 2 or 3,000 people who have read this blog post. But what happens is over 18% of the people who read that blog post click through a link and then go to our sales video. And then of those people, 4% actually join Scriptly. And I'm thinking,
wow,
well, geez, 4% is much, much higher than the industry average of 1.5% or 2% for our sales video. So if we were just to send traffic directly to the sales video, we'd get about 2% conversion. So by putting this blog post, for all intents and purposes, before the sales video, we're able to double that conversion. So we're getting 4% conversion now. So it makes sense to send all the traffic in the world to that one content piece because you're bonding with your audience. You're establishing, you know, your their trust in you. And then ultimately, they're taking the actions that you need them to take to sign up. 4 out of 100 people. So if you're getting clicks for 12 cents or 15 cents or whatever to that content piece, it doesn't take long to get a new sale.
No, I think that's fantastic. And what's really nice about this is that, again, if you're an expert in this area, this is not going to be that difficult. I think it's easier than putting together a video. Anybody's ever trying to do a video, you know what I'm talking about. Where, I've worked with very intelligent people who are experts in their field, and as soon as that little red camera light comes on, they forget to speak English, right? I mean, so a 2-minute video takes you 6 hours.
Yeah, and then there's editing and writing the script for it and all that stuff. Just leave the video alone. Leave it where it is. If you have, leave the sales stuff where it is. All you need to do is write a blog post, and in that blog post, include a link to the sales video or the sales process. And technically, you have a content marketing piece.
All right, so let me ask you about this. So as far as driving traffic, I mentioned Facebook ads earlier. How, in your experience, has that been? Have you been driving cold traffic to these blog contents? What's been the result?
Another great question. So what we do is we drive cold traffic to the blog posts themselves. Basically, we take the whole universe of people who may be interested in what we're doing, and we drive them to the blog posts. So once they hit the website, they read the blog post, they opt in, they click through, whatever. All of those things are bonuses. Like if they click through a link and then ultimately go buy, you know, that's perfect. That's awesome. But what we do is anybody who doesn't buy, we've talked about it on the show before. It's called retargeting. And basically what retargeting does is it allows you to show somebody a banner ad who has been on your site. And so as soon as they leave our site, our ads are going to start following them around. Not like at a frequency that's creepy, You know, you're not going to, like, leave and then all of a sudden see 17 banner ads on the same page for our product, you know, trying to get you back. But you're going to start to see them.
So. Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out what would happen if all of a sudden they saw 17 ads. I wonder. but I love this retargeting thing. And if you guys aren't using retargeting, if you have questions about retargeting, you can reach out to Jason at jasondrone.com is his website. And retargeting is something that Jason's been working with me on. And this is really a very powerful tool. I know I interrupted you, but, you know, I wanted to ask you this. When it comes to retargeting, I think you told me that, you know, right now you're spending like a third, it was some outrageous amount of money, like 20 or 30 bucks a week on retargeting.
Yeah, well, right. It ends up being, so every ad will spend 25 bucks a week on. You know, so it's funny because so they come in, they hit a piece of blog post, and that costs us about 10 cents per click, 10, 15 cents. Nothing crazy there. You know, and then once they hit the page, we spend 25 bucks a week per ad and just follow them around the internet, basically. So, but when it all shakes out, what we find is that we get a new lead, and that new lead is actually their second interaction with us because they hit a blog post in order to get on the retargeting. So their second interaction with us, the new lead is about half as much as it would have cost normally if we were just to drive traffic right to an opt-in page. And they buy about two times more frequently because it is their second interaction. We're not a new brand to them anymore. You know, they already have a little bit of trust that we built up with them because of the blog post. So what happens is if we were before we adopted this strategy, we were spending about $2.50 per new lead. Now, by doing this kind of two-step strategy where we bring somebody into the content and then retarget them into a landing page, we're spending about $1.10 per lead. So we almost took our traffic costs and split them in half, you know, to get a new lead into the funnel.
That's incredible.
So it's worked really well. Not to mention, you know, I get emails all the time, you know, from people that I'm a little closer to than just like a normal, you know, customer, like they buy a piece of software, somebody I've talked to in the past, and they're like, oh, my God, I'm seeing you everywhere. Are you blowing up? And it's like, well, yes, because of the strategy, but no, I mean, it's not like we're spending $10,000 a day on advertising. You know, we're just doing it smart. And
right.
So it's just interesting.
Yeah, you know, and I like that because, again, all of us want to look like we're everywhere, but, of course, you can't afford to do that. But if you could imagine taking Jason's scenario there, you have 100 people that hit your blog post content, and now whether they opt in or not, they're going to see your ads everywhere. That is a great way to build know, like, and trust. Mm-hmm. And it's also a great way to give them, your audience, a feeling like, wow, these guys are everywhere. And let me tell mm-hmm. you guys, this is everybody's done something like this, where you see an ad, and maybe you don't click on that ad right away, but you see it. And it's, you know, might be whatever the ad is. It's something that you're interested in. That's why you're seeing the ad, or that's why you clicked on it, you read it, but you didn't take any action. And then you see the ad on a regular basis over the next, might be 30 days, 90 days, mm-hmm. Might be 9 months, might be a year or two. And then you finally click on that ad and you go to the next step. You maybe take a mm-hmm. phone call. Maybe you buy the product or the widget or the service, because that is part of the buying, the behavioral buying process of your audience. A certain percentage of them are going to take a year or longer to buy from you, but only, and this is where retargeting comes in and just regular advertising comes in, but only if they continue to see your ad. And so mm-hmm. retargeting allows you to do that cheaper and more targeted.
Right. Well, right. What you're doing with retargeting is you're putting together your own list, a very small list, you know, obviously at first, a very small list of people that are hyper-focused on what you're doing, you know. So you're not paying the big media companies to go out and put your ad all over the place for a bunch of people who might not be interested. You already know these people are interested because they already hit your site. You know, they already landed on your site. Whether they stay 2 seconds or 13 hours, it doesn't matter. They're still seeing your ad. So in that sense, you're able to keep traffic costs, you know, really low. The other nice thing about it is with the targeting, you know, promoting the blog post, it's like adding fuel on the fire. You know, sometimes you just don't need any more fuel. You know, sometimes you don't need any more new eyeballs coming to your website. You just want to nurture the retargeting list. So if you don't want new people coming in, if your client list is full, if you're in the middle of an upgrade on your servers or whatever, you know, you might just turn off all that cold traffic and you're not penalized at all for it, and you keep the retargeting going just so people continue seeing you out there, and you end up cutting your traffic costs in half again. And you're still catering to the people who have already seen you. They've already expressed some interest in you. But you're just not adding any fuel on the fire. You know what I mean?
Right. Or minimal fuel to the fire, because some of those people, obviously, after they've seen you again for, you know, you're now everywhere, they may say, oh, you know what, I remember this guy or this girl, and I want to go ahead and buy from them. But I love that idea. You can turn off your cold traffic and turn on your retargeting traffic, because we've all seen or heard, and we all probably know about what damage we do when we turn off our marketing. We stop doing the email marketing, stop doing the cold traffic. This retargeting allows you to keep your costs minimal, but not go invisible.
Exactly. Well, right. A couple of great examples. One, I mean, we're building a business. Sometimes cash flow is a little bit tight. You know what I mean? It's just how it goes.
Sure.
And
way to go.
So you can turn off the cold traffic. That's scenario number one. And without minimizing your effect on the people who are already in your process, that's scenario one. Scenario two, Easter. We just went through Easter. Hardly anybody bought anything over Easter. I was just looking through the sales and all of our niches. I'm like, geez, should have turned off the traffic. But we didn't. You know, around Christmas, Amazon and Best Buy and all of them, they're driving traffic costs through the roof. You know, so, but why not? You know, the beautiful thing about this model is with retargeting, we can just manage that budget. And then once it gets to, like, the middle of December, we can turn all cold traffic off, because we know that inventory is just going to be swallowed up by people, you know, billion-dollar companies. So
Right. We're
not competing with them. But with retargeting, we don't have to, you know?
I love it. I love it. Yeah. All right, guys. So couple of tips there today. Blog content or content still king. Content's always been king. But again, if you're like a lot of people who don't like video, then just go back to content or writing content. Make it useful and valuable, something that is actionable. You can put an ad in your content. You correct me if I'm wrong. You can put an ad in your content for opt-ins. You can put an ad in your content for whatever product you're selling. But don't make it a really salesy type article. It's got to be good. Go ahead.
Delivering value.
You're delivering value. Yeah, it is all about the value delivery. And then from there, you're gonna build your highly targeted list. Why? Because of the retargeting. And so just for you guys who aren't real clear on retargeting. Retargeting is something that you can do with Facebook ads. You can do it outside of Facebook. Google has retargeting as well. I think, Jason, you were talking about a company called AdRoll that you like to use.
Yep.
And there's a couple of different companies. And all retargeting is, they put a little snippet of code in the marketing world. They call it a pixel. But it's just a little one or two line of code that sits on a specific article or page or whatever. And when somebody lands on that, it drops a cookie in their browser, or not, yeah, I guess it's in their browser. It drops a cookie on, and everywhere they go, they'll see your ad again, or they'll see something about you. And it's just a way to build that like, know, and trust. And the nice thing about retargeting, the way retargeting works, in advertising, there's this thing called the rule of seven, which means that somebody has to see your ad a minimum of seven times. Now, today, maybe it might be 10 times, but either way, they have to see you seven or eight or 10 times before they recognize that they're seeing you. Now, again, with blog content, that might be a little bit different, But if you can imagine, instead of taking a month or three or five or six for somebody to really recognize your brand, now you're able to do it in a matter of a week. In just a few days, they could see you in multiple places, and all of a sudden, that by sheer repetition, they're starting to like, know, and trust you.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. That's a great summary.
All right. Well, good. Well, listen, man, good stuff. Always good to have you on the show. And if you guys want to know more about Jason or Scriply or any of the other products that he's got, I would encourage you to go to Jason Drone. That's DROHN.com, JasonDrone.com. Check out what he's doing there. It'll blow you away. Jason, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Good stuff there from Jason Drone. And we're going to take a quick commercial break. And then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. My next guest is Sierra Neal, founder and president of an organization called Shimmer Sparkle Shine Project. The Shimmer Sparkle Shine Project prepares and hosts workshops for young girls in an effort to help them realize their own self-worth. Their website is shimmersparkleshineproject.org, and I found out about the organization on Instagram, so you guys can check them out on Instagram as well. But it's shimmersparkleshineproject.org. Sierra Neal, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet, you bet. All right, so why don't you tell us a little bit about the Shimmer Sparkle Shine Project, and what was the motivation? What was it that inspired you to start the organization?
So, as you had said, our organization prepares and hosts these workshops for young girls that are full of, like, different games and crafts and types of activities to help them come to the realization their self. And what kind of gave me the push to want to make this project is I was bullied a lot when I was younger, and I did not feel very good about myself at all. And so when I got older and those wounds were able to heal, I decided I wanted to do something about it. And I wanted to make sure that no girl felt the same way I did. So that's what made me want to create the project.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I think that's fantastic that you're able to take this situation and instead of turn it into something positive. I mean, obviously, we all have to deal with bullying, and this is a great way to take that pain and make it useful. Congratulations to you for doing that. I think that's fantastic. And so when you're saying young girls, what's the youngest, what's the oldest, what's the age range there?
So our workshops are primarily engaged for women who are 8 to 13, but we make it so that like the volunteers who participate we like to make it so that they learn just as much as the girls that they are helping, but through a different lens. And we like to have girls who are about 15 to 18 years old help us out, but we do older as well. And so that's the main age range that we like to target. But we also do different types of campaigns throughout the year through social media. And with that, we like to hit women of all ages.
I like that. I like that. And I like the fact that, again, you're getting, slightly younger girls involved to be mentors or tutor the younger girls. I think that's a fantastic way. It's a fantastic way for not only are you helping out your target market, but you're also helping out the girls that come in and mentor and tutor them because they get something out of it as well, don't they?
Exactly. And that's what we like to see is that they get something out of it just because our program wasn't there for them when they were younger because it wasn't around at the time or they just heard about it recently, that they can still get and benefit from the program. Because I believe that when we are helping others, that we learn just as much, and serving others is a way to learn about ourselves. And so we really try to focus on that.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I think that's a great example. All right, so let's talk about this. When you're doing these workshops, are these workshops are they about building self-esteem? Are you dealing with something else? Talk a little bit about the workshop.
So we have the belief at the project that you can't change how others act, but you can change how you react and how you view yourself from it. So unfortunately, kids are always going to be mean. So we give them the tools so that they can handle those situations. So we have the five keys to self-worth, which are healthy living, comfort in your own skin, good friends versus bad friends, making your mark, and personality. And they rotate through each of those, and they do different activities, and they talk about the key and what it means, and they learn how they can apply that to their own life.
Yeah, I like that. I like that so much because a lot of us grow up blaming others. It's their fault. It's out there. It's the infamous they. And yes, there are bullies out there. And yes, there are people out there who can cause us harm or discomfort or become obstacles. But it's really how we react or respond that makes the difference.
Exactly.
All right. So when did you start the project?
I started it when I was 16. So that would be the summer of 2011.
Well, that's fantastic. So you started it when you were a young girl, 16 years old. And
yes.
How did the name come up? Shimmer, Sparkle, Shine.
Yeah, it's kind of a mouthful. we like the name, but I feel bad because on like a radio type thing, it's hard to say the name. It's really has to be said very clearly. But the name, I just always have liked that phrase when I was a kid. I was always very girly, and so I would just say that, and it was something that I taught myself to say in the mirror when I was bullied a lot to pick myself up and kind of like give myself that pep talk.
Right.
And then when I started doing this and working with girls individually at first, because that's what I did before I started doing workshops, and I was talking to my mom about it, and I was like, I don't know what to call this. And then she told me, I know exactly what you need to call it. And then she told me, and I was like, that makes like so much sense. That's what I taught myself to help get through those years. And so I might as well transfer it over.
Yes, that's great. I just like that. I like the fact that you had enough sense. So let me ask you, when you were doing this pep talk, the self pep talk, was that something that your mother helped you with? Did you come up with this on your own? How did this pep talk come up? Get started.
I just came up with it myself. I just how to find a way to want to get myself up and want to get myself to go to sort of classes and see these kids time after time. And I always like dressing myself and, you know, being girly and fixing my hair and all those things. So it was kind of like all went together that I would look good and that's what I would tell myself and that's what would help me get through it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right. So let's talk about this. If somebody listening right now is, let's say, I guess let's say they haven't gotten over being bullied, what would you tell an adult today that maybe is still being held back because of something that happened, you know, back in school where they felt bullied, or maybe they didn't think they were very lovable or very maybe they doubt their own self-worth? What do you tell those people?
I tell those people that your imperfections are the worst inside of your own head. And when we learn to let those go, that's when we're able to be okay with ourselves and who we have been in the past and who we will be in the future. And once we learn and we get through the idea that it doesn't matter what we had wrong with us or what challenges we had or what people said about us, that like we're all different and we all have our own purpose to unlock in life, and just because it wasn't the same as somebody else doesn't mean that you're not worth anything, and
right.
to keep on trying to find their purpose and that they will get
yes.
there.
Yes, absolutely. And I also like the idea of the self-talk. I think that self-talk is very important because it is something that we do all the time. I mean, we sit there in a car, we're talking to ourselves, even when we're listening to music or to a book or something, we're talking to ourselves. And unfortunately, something clicks, you know, where we have a very positive self-image when we're in our early, years, let's say, through elementary school. But as we start to socialize and maybe get to around fifth grade or sixth grade or seventh grade, we start to doubt our self-worth. We're being introduced to bullies, or we're being introduced to the harsh realities of life that not everybody might like us, and we start to doubt ourselves. But we start to create this very negative self-talk, and about 80% of our self-talk becomes negative. We start to validate others' opinion of ourselves, I think, and it really hurts our ability to have fun. It definitely hurts our self-esteem, our self-worth. It hurts our ability to enjoy life, don't you think?
It certainly does. And I believe, like, as you get older, you start to lose, you know, I guess you mature and you lose that very childlike spark, I guess you would call it that. Like, you do your own thing and you don't care what others think. And as you're around other people, as you grow older, you kind of sadly make yourself believe what they say, and you lose your own independence and who you are and being okay with it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's incredible what that, what that amount of negativity, and again, a lot of that negativity is our responsibility, not our fault, just our responsibility, just like it wasn't Sierra's fault, but she took responsibility. And I think that you obviously had your head on straight, whether it was your parents or something that you learned on your own, you did a great job, because a lot of 16-year-olds really would not be thinking about serving others and helping other people out. They're just trying to make it through school. So you were able to, start thinking outside of yourself, and you had that inspiration, if you will, to say, hey, if I'm going through this, maybe I can help other people go through this as well, and I guess recover or heal from it. So to date, how many workshops have you been working with, or how many workshops have you guys completed?
Wow, I've actually never sat down and added like how many workshops we've done up, which is kind of crazy to think. I mean, because we've been growing, you know, we don't.
Right.
We can't do them nearly as often as we like since we're growing our budget. But since we started, I think we've done near 20 workshops.
Nice.
And, I mean, we primarily work in the summertime because that's when the kids have more time to do these programs. And that's when I'm home, because I don't live where our main focus is during most of the year, but we are starting to do more and more every year.
That is so cool. That is so cool. That is great. All right, so if you guys want to contribute, if you want to find out more about the Shimmer Sparkle Shine Project, you can go to shimmersparkleshineproject.org, shimmersparkleshineproject.org. There you can donate, you can help, you can get involved with Sierra and her team and help you know, these kids with the situation that we all have to deal with, which is some, you know, our self-worth, our self-esteem. And Sierra, it's been just an absolute pleasure having you on the show today, and I look forward to having you back again and getting an update to what's happening there at shimmersparkleshineproject.org.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Good stuff there. I just love the fact that Sierra, at such an early age, realized that she could be a voice of change. And that's what she's done. She's affected probably hundreds, if not thousands of people, because she changed the way she looked at her situation. It's just fantastic. So good job there. ShimmerSparkleShineProject.org. Sierra is doing a fantastic job. Let's support her. Let's show her some love from the Money for Lunch fans there. We're going to take a quick commercial break.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick. Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. My next guest, Craig Smalley. Craig Smalley was admitted to practice before the Internal Revenue Service as an enrolled agent, is a certified estate planner, and a certified tax resolution specialist. He holds the Craig was the founder of CWSEAPA. That's a mouthful. A nationally recognized brand of accounting, financial, and tax services with offices in Florida, Nevada, Delaware. His articles are regularly published in NASDAQ and Yahoo Finance, among others. He has written 12 books on accounting and taxation, and he's also a regular contributor on Accounting Web and Nerd Wallet. Craig Smalley, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, it's great being here. Thank you for having me.
You bet. All right, so here you are. You started as an enrolled agent. Now, when you started going down this path, was a certified estate planner, was that part of the original plan, or is that something that organically came out as you were going down this financial path?
It organically came out. I got into estate planning because, you know, a lot of my clients, I saw just how, you know, torn apart they were when, you know, somebody died. So the big breadwinner would die and, you know, the siblings would fight over money because they didn't have any estate plans. And it was like, you know, I should really, really offer this to my clients because it's, you know, it's something that, you know, when somebody dies, there's so many emotions that go on. You just want to kind of, you know, just have a plan in place and just have a complete independent third party executing the plan. So nobody's fighting over anything and the wishes of the decedent are always met.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is just a horrible time to realize how ill-prepared you are. You know, when something like that happens, and you know what, let me tell you, here not too long ago, my brother-in-law passed away, and the way he was found was, and he was a relatively young guy, 57 years old or something like that, and he was found dead. They were getting ready to go out to dinner. He's taking a shower. He steps out of the shower, has a massive heart attack and dies. And they found him right there. And so my point being is now, right now is the time to prepare. Right now is the time to sit down with your spouse and significant other and share these important documents. Find out where you stand financially. How are you going to handle the stuff? Because guarantee you, we all are going to die. And I guarantee most of us, if not all of us, do not know exactly when. I mean, if you're in the hospital and you're slowly dying, you can kind of prepare for it. But more times than not, it's this bam, didn't see it coming, didn't expect it, terrible situation that wakes everybody up in the most egregious way.
Exactly. And everybody that's out there needs an estate plan. And I don't care if you don't have millions and millions of dollars, or, you know, you may just have a house, or you may just have, you know, some possessions that you want to pass on to somebody. The problem is that most states, if you don't have a plan, they will come in and the state will decide what happens to everything. So everybody needs an estate plan. Everybody does.
Right. You know what? And I went to law school many, many years ago, and I remember the one thing that I remembered about having a will, and I want your opinion on this, is because a lot of people think, hey, I have a will, I'm good to go. But if you have a will, it means that you will go to probate. And again, you have the state in your business telling you what to do, right? The will is not the
best. Exactly. And you can have somebody contest the will, somebody that's not part of the will. They can contest it. They can tie it up. And, yeah, that's why I always tell people to form revocable living trusts. Those are so much easier. There, the state is out of your business. Everything passes by matter of law. It's so much easier that way than having a will, because, you know, the will, like you said, goes through probate, and then the creditors find out about it, and, you know, by the time all the vultures have come in and taken what, you know, what they think is theirs or what the court deems as theirs, what's left is usually nothing or very little to, you know, to give to your, you know, the people that you've left behind.
Yes. No, it's incredible. It's incredible. So, guys, please do that today. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about our good friends, our buddies at the Internal Revenue Service. Let's talk about specifically, what do you do when you get an IRS notice? So I know a lot of people freeze up. They're getting a notice from the IRS. But does that mean you're really in trouble? What does it mean when you get a notice from the IRS?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I know that there is a direct correlation between an IRS notice and a heart attack. I mean, when people get an IRS notice, they freak out about it, right? So a lot of times what some of our clients will do is they'll save those notices. They won't even open them up. And then come tax time, they'll bring us, you know, a stack of notices that they received from the IRS. When you get a notice from the IRS, it means that they need information from you, or somebody's made an error or something has happened. Open up the notice. Open up the notice and read it. And the most important thing about those notices is once you have to start signing for them, they're very, very important because you have rights. Now, in 1997, there was a big overhaul of the Internal Revenue Service, and out of that came the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. And it was just updated 3 or 4 months ago. And, you know, you have the right to representation. You have the right to be treated fairly. You have the right to pay the correct amount of tax. But if you ignore those letters, and especially the ones that you have to sign for them, you start losing those rights because on one of the letters that they'll have you sign is something called a final intent to levy. If you don't act on that, you've lost basically all of your rights. And the next thing that comes is an IRS lien. And then after a lien can come a levy or a wage garnishment or something similar to that. So really open those notices and read them. And if you don't understand, find somebody that does. And just getting out in front of it and being proactive about it will save you a considerable amount of turmoil come later.
Yes. So let's talk about this real quick. I want to just emphasize, reiterate what you're talking about. Look, guys, if you're getting a notice from the IRS, the worst thing you could do is ignore it. You know, the IRS is not going to go away. The IRS is very powerful. And when you owe them money, the penalties and the interest add up quickly. They can grab your money out of your bank account. Anybody who's ignored the IRS has never said, man, I'm so glad I ignored the IRS. That problem solved itself. It doesn't get better. You know,
exactly.
Talk to an attorney, talk to your accountant, talk to somebody that can say, this is what you got to do. And most of the time, I like what you said earlier, they need some kind of information. Maybe they need a new tax return because you left something off. Maybe they need an explanation. It's not always so dreadfully bad that you should ignore it.
Yeah, and the problem is the IRS is the most notorious collection agency, I think, behind the mafia. So, when people get those notices, they are scared to death when they get them. But a lot of times it's just simply we're missing this schedule or we're missing that schedule. Or even if there was a miscalculation on your tax return, well, they make mistakes all the time. And they're sending you a letter saying that, you know, this wasn't on your tax return. And then, you know, lo and behold, they make a calculation error saying that you owe this. And if you let it go on and you let it go on, you can get into a lot of trouble. And, you know, there's an entire industry called tax resolution that is devoted to this. And it's kind of funny. You've probably been watching television during the day maybe or late at night, and you'll see these commercials that come on and, you know, it'll be some guy saying, do you owe the IRS $10,000? We can settle for pennies on the dollar. So there's whole industry. The problem with that industry is that it is a very, very nasty business, and it's a very, they prey on, people being scared of the IRS, and they, you know, a lot of times people will, they'll pay them large retainers and the company ends up not doing anything for them. And, you know, we saw this over and over again. And then, you know, I decided that we were going to form a company called Tax Crisis Center to tackle this. And that's exactly what we did. And it's a company that I absolutely love because I love representing clients and I love fighting for the rights of taxpayers, because again, like I said, you have rights. And, you know, it's something that, if you do have an IRS notice, you see a commercial on television and you're thinking of going with the firm, always go to Google and type in ripoff report in the name of that firm. And if there's anything there on ripoff report, probably not the firm for you.
Right. And the thing about it is, my understanding, and I want to get your opinion on this, is that a lot of these people that you see on TV who tell you they can settle your debt for pennies on the dollar, that's not always accurate, because my understanding is that you have to prove to the IRS that you – that this particular settlement is in the best interest of both parties. I mean, if you have a bunch of money and a bunch of assets, the IRS is not going to let you settle for pennies on the dollar. They may waive interest. They may waive some penalties. But they're going to want financial data to verify
that
you have no other choice, right? Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the problem. So what I'm talking about is something called an offer and compromise. You're offering the IRS something to compromise the debt. Now, the problem with asking for an offer and compromise is you have to give up a lot of information. You've got to give up bank account numbers. You have to give up your 401k numbers. You have to give up all of your assets. Tell them exactly where they're at. You know, for instance, the address of your house, who the loan, who holds a loan on it, you know, all of these different things. You have to tell them specifically where your assets are. Now, the problem is when people go to file offers in compromise, they typically have a lien against them. And with a lien, the IRS can start levying your assets. So if you file an offer in compromise and it's not accepted, you've just told the IRS where all of your assets are so they can start levying them. So you've got to be very, very, very careful, because there's so many firms out there that will just, they'll just take your money and say, yeah, we can do this and we can file them. And I know, you know, one of the main reason we started Tax Crisis Center was because of that, because, you know, there's only 17% of those offers that get filed actually get accepted. So it's something that we look at, you know, to make sure, and we don't ever file one of those unless we know that there's at least an 80 to 90% chance that it'll go through. Because if it doesn't, like I said, you've just given them the key to everything to where they can get your assets. So you've got to be very, very careful about that.
Yeah, no, I like that. All right, so let me ask you this. If I come to you with an offer in compromise, I fill out all the paperwork that's necessary, can you look at it and say, hey, Bert, I don't think this is going to work? Or, hey, Bert,
exactly,
there's probably a good chance
that it might
work.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, so when somebody has a tax problem, the first thing we do is we have them fill out a very long, detailed information of assets and everything else. And we look at that and we analyze it and we're like, well, we can, you know, take this route or we can take that route. And sometimes it's the offer route. And sometimes it's as simple as just an installment arrangement, which is just telling the IRS that you're going to pay them in over 72 months in small increments. Sometimes you don't have any money, you don't have any assets, and you could be put on something called the currently not collectible account, where the IRS just, they don't bother you because they currently can't collect from you. And that's usually if you're unemployed or you have no assets or something like that. And we look at that and we analyze it and we make sure before we file the offer that it has a really good chance of going through.
Yeah, I like that so much. I think it's so important. And again, you know, I like what you said earlier, guys, I like what you said earlier, and guys should pay attention. That is, if you see somebody on TV saying, hey, we can do this for you for 10 cents on the dollar, do a little digging. Not everybody can do it, and you don't want to be ripped off and then have to still pay the IRS. So do some homework. Don't just take them at face value. I like what you said. Check out Ripoff Report. You know, maybe contact some people, not just on Ripoff Report, because maybe it's not on there, but maybe just do some digging on Google. How long has this company been around? Look, if they've been around for less than a year, maybe not a good idea. If they've been around for 5 or 10 years, they might be good. Check it with the Better Business Bureau. But do some homework, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm not saying that everybody that's on TV is bad. That's not true. There are some reputable firms on there, but I would say probably about 80% of them are just companies that are just, you know, looking to prey on you, because everybody has this fear of the IRS, and it's okay to have a healthy fear of the IRS, but typically somebody like me, we know what they can do to you and what they can't do to you. So it's something that you want to be very, very careful, because, you know, to do these offers, to file these offers, it can cost a little bit of money to do it, and you want to make sure that you're hiring a reputable firm to do that.
I love it. We're going to end on that note.
And it's really not something you want to tackle on your own. It's not something you want to do on your own.
Right. And I want to say this real quick. I agree with you. Look, if you work with the IRS on a regular basis, then you probably could do it on your own. But I know attorneys, okay, litigators who process, they're used to fighting in court, who will go out and get help for their tax problems. Why? Because it's not their area of specialty. So it's good to have a specialist, right?
Absolutely, yes. You want somebody that specializes in this. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, we've heard so much about certified public accountants and CPAs, and I'm an EA, so the difference there is that CPAs are licensed by the state and they're licensed accountants, and 95% of them don't specialize in tax. They do other things. They audit financial statements for public companies.
Craig, we got to go. We're out of time, but I'd love to bring you back and talk more about this stuff. It's been great. It's good to have you on the show. Guys, if you have questions, you can reach out at CWSEAPA.com. Thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You bet. Good stuff there about you and the IRS, what to do when you get a notice. Do not fear. Just open it up. Take a deep breath. Open it up, and then, you know, you'll know what to do after that. Remember, most importantly, and I say this all the time because I believe it, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.